It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Good morning out there in internet radio land. Thank you for joining us this morning on the Independence Network. First day of spring, March 19th. We are rocking and rolling here on the morning show. Got David Iverson in the studio, ready to bring you all that entertainment and commentary you crave. How are we doing this morning, David?
Pretty good, Joey. How about yourself this morning?
Oh, I didn't sleep a lick last night, but I will be making up for it today. But it doesn't matter because we got a job to do, and looks like we've somehow scraped out enough content to get another show together, and we may have a little too much kind of our way. We start by saying, well, we don't have anything, and then 20 minutes later we're like, oh, we got to start the show with this giant list of stuff we've just created. So yeah, let's jump to it. Yesterday we had a pretty good show. We're still working out some of the technical bugs doing this live remote morning show from two sides of the state. But on the show yesterday, we had a little discussion about Mr. Rod Miller's feeling about Wyoming nativism. And apparently Facebook, social media, and the people of Wyoming had a little different opinion than Rod. What did you see yesterday as a reaction to all this, if you ain't from here, just shut up kind of crap?
Well, first, I think it's pretty obvious where Rod Miller's alliances lie. He's always in favor of bigger government, more taxation, and of course, he's the head cheerleader for the Wyoming caucus. Now, the Wyoming caucus is the political establishment in Wyoming, the leftist establishment that has been in Wyoming, that has controlled Wyoming for the last 40 years. And he likens them to John Kendrick and the muckety mucks at the Wyoming Stock Growers Association. And he says I've got that backwards. So he likens Nate Champion, who, if you know anything about the Johnson County Cattle War, Nate Champion was the guy that went up against John Kendrick. Champion was kind of represented some of the smaller ranching outfits, most of whom were in Johnson County. And Kendrick, he was in charge of the Wyoming Stock Growers Association, or the political establishment. And it was John Kendrick that hired all of these Texas gunmen to come in and kill everybody in Johnson County and do away with all these small-time ranchers whom he had labeled as cattle rustlers. So Rod Miller is trying to equate the Wyoming Freedom Caucus with these Texas invaders. And the response I saw on social media was hilarious, that Rod Miller has the entire analogy backwards, that he's completely wrong in his analysis of it, that he doesn't know what he's talking about with the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. The comments on social media were probably some of the more funny ones that I've read in a while. Just people from all across the state of Wyoming going after Rod Miller. And eventually he posted a response, and he's like, well, it's my opinion and I'm entitled to it. You know, he doesn't address any of the fact that he may have been wrong about the entire thing, but it's my opinion and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I love how he always backs himself up with, I said what I said, or that's my opinion and I'm sticking by my word. Okay, well, I've always said, you know, and I did crib this from Joe McGinley. I'll give credit where credit's due. I support your absolute right to be absolutely wrong all the time. Not a problem. You can be wrong, but when you're wrong, I don't know if it's humility you need to have or just, hey, stop trying to drive that train forward. You've been proven wrong, even if it is your opinion. You got to give it up. And I don't know why Rod thinks he's got some kind of magic wand or likability that's on my, hey, I said so, and that's how it is. Is it really getting to the point where an entire state of people disagreeing with Rod Miller, he still doesn't accept that, okay, maybe I should just get off that. Whether he's right or wrong or has the right to or not, just get off that train and go somewhere else. I mean, he continues to back up his faux pas. It's like watching Joe Biden and nobody pulling him off stage, just leaving him up there. He's constantly stepping in it, gaffing. And really, the problem I have with the focus and the attention is now people are arguing about the historical accuracy of the Johnson County Cattle War and have gotten away from the entire point of this is, I don't know, nativism, segregating nativism. Hey, we're better than you because we were born here. Dave Simpson wrote a little, like you said, tongue-in-cheek op-ed. We talked about that yesterday, where the whole point was, it's not our fault where our mothers birthed us. It doesn't make us better or worse people. And I think he was a little light on his point there, and maybe he wasn't really trying to pick at Rod. But there was another letter to the editor that the Cow Pie had that was very historically accurate. It had a couple of, I don't know, dingers in there as well. But the interesting thing about that response to Rod Miller's article was the Cow Pie put it up on their website, but they haven't posted it to their social media. And almost any time someone writes a letter to the editor from the establishment Wyomingite side, that letter to the editor is always posted on the social media. So people actually had to work to find this pushback against Rod Miller. But once it was out there, man, the lid just came off the can of worms, and Rod probably didn't have a glorious and magical day yesterday.
No, I'm sure he didn't. And, you know, the letter to the editor you were talking about, it's interesting in the sense that I don't think that I've seen a piece published in the Wyoming media from Darcy Gudger, who's the person that wrote it. I don't think I've seen any of her work before in the Cow Pie or the Casper Star Tribune. I haven't seen it. So it's coming from a relatively, you know, quiet voice in Wyoming. Someone who obviously has some knowledge of Wyoming history, although, you know, like you said, there were a couple factual errors. But it really went, I don't know that it went, you could say that it went viral. Maybe we could say that it went Wyoming viral.
I'm sorry, I forgot to hit my cough button, bring my mic back. Yeah, and that's important to us. I mean, we get excited over mediocre numbers here because in Wyoming, those are big numbers. And really, if you can inspire more than 50 people to react to just about anything in Wyoming, you're doing okay on social media. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of people, but you got to think about, I don't know, I'm not from Wyoming. I wasn't born here, but I know Wyoming posture well enough to where if you got 50 people are actually doing something about something, you probably have about 5,000 that are actually engaged. They're just not showing it. They're not clicking the button. They're not getting off their butt saying or doing anything. So, yeah, I would love to get back to the focus of the issue on social media and in reality of the fact that Dave Simpson was kind of right. It doesn't matter where you were born. And this kind of is going to lead into another story we're going to talk about. But if it's not from here, it's not automatically bad. And if you have any merit in your argument, there are so many other areas that you need to focus on. You know, like I said yesterday, education. Why are we continuing to import professors from the left coast and, you know, New York? If anything not from Wyoming is bad, why are we trying to spend hundreds of millions of dollars through the Wyoming Business Council to bring in businesses that aren't from Wyoming? There's so many other focuses other than arguing the details of the death of Nate Champion, that I'd like to get back to the point, which is Rod Miller's pointless.
Well, I think essentially you're talking about, I mean, what we ought to be talking about is the fallaciousness of Barry Crago and Clark Stith's argument that there's all these move-in politicians and that's the problem. Now, first of all, it's absolutely hypocritical because they're move-in politicians too. But second, that's the argument they're going with. That really, you don't have anything else. You have to say, well, if it's not from here, you just shouldn't pay any attention to it. That's absurd, and it's backward. I think we mentioned maybe yesterday or last week on the program that, or on one of the shows we've done, like I say, they're still kind of blending together a little bit, that if you've never left the state, and if you're only focusing on things that come from Wyoming, and the only valid ideas are the ones that originate in Wyoming, first of all, I think that that's profoundly ignorant, that, you know, you're not interested in any other opinions other than your own, and you want to continue to wallow in your own mediocrity, which a lot of the ideas that the Wyoming caucus comes up with, I mean, they end up in a place where you entrench the existing problems because you're not really addressing them, because the solutions you've come up with from Wyoming aren't fixing the issue. And so you're just rejecting any possibility that somebody else might have a better idea of doing this. And I mean, it's no more absurd, Joey, than me saying, well, you're from Carbon County, so I don't want to listen to anything you have to say about matters in Sheridan County. I mean, it's the whole argument is stupid, and I'm kind of flabbergasted that they actually went with it.
Yeah, and my biggest problem, and I've experienced this through my travels around the world, the false sense of superiority, and this really gets down to the meat of it, is we're talking about a group of elitists that have no merit for their elitism. They just have to make stuff up. But they really believe it makes them better, smarter, more capable just to have spent more time in what Rod calls the big empty, which I think because he's a fiction writer, he's referring to his head when he says the big empty. But when I was stationed in Hawaii, there was the same mindset of you have no merit or ability or value because you're not a Hawaiian, you're just a visitor here. I was stationed there and I coined a term called too much pride without anything to be proud of. It's just, well, I'm Hawaiian and you're a Haole, and get, you know, that it's ridiculous. Same thing. I don't know if you ever watched the movie, Martin Scorsese did a movie called The Gangs of New York, where it was the natives versus the immigrants. And it's the same thing. There are valid contributions from every group that comes across. And it really surprises me that this is the, like you said, the narrative they picked and ran with in the equality state.
Yeah. Well, there's one more historical point here that I'll just touch on briefly. And it may seem a little disjointed, but let's talk about education in Wyoming. Wyoming is one of the only, if not the only state to have fully funded education in our Wyoming Constitution. The reason why we did that is at the time the Constitution was written, there was this, I don't know, belief in Congress that Wyoming is populated by nothing but a bunch of criminals. Well, actually, that wasn't entirely untrue. At the time, Wyoming was pretty much the Wild Wild West. I mean, you watch movies of, you know, the Wild West. Well, many parts of Wyoming really were that. It was pretty much an open territory. So people from all over the country moved here, criminals or otherwise. And there was this sense in Congress that, well, Wyoming's just a bunch of, uneducated moron criminals. And so we put it in our Constitution. Well, we'll show you. We're just going to pay for education. And so even the very history of Wyoming it completely undercuts Rod Miller's point.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree at all. And we'll have to see how this shakes out. But I'd like to, stick it to a couple of these candidates who are involved and either get them to say on the record they absolutely disagree, or catch them in a comment saying, Wyoming nativism is important. And that's going to be one of the main questions I'm going to be asking candidates throughout the season here, is not are you from Wyoming or not, but what importance do you place on multi-generational Wyomingism, and see if they even have an answer, because it's going to start to get sticky, and I'd hate to see an internal civil war. We already have a rift in the Republican Party. We don't need an out on the street, natives versus immigrants brawl here. But when it comes down to it, the next time Cyrus Western asks, where's the white women at? You just say, hey, they're not from here, so they couldn't stay here.
Albeit, there's questions.
So you had
about
a story.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, bud. We got to work on that lag. You had a story, something coming out of D.C. We haven't done D.C. politics in a long time.
Which one you want to go to?
Oh, what was that first one you told me about regulating social media companies?
Oh, yeah. So that's a good one. There's a couple of cases that are, one of which was before the Supreme Court yesterday, but it all revolves around government influence in social media companies. And Harvard scholar, intellectual alumnus, monumental mind, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Here's what she had to say in a question.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
Wow. So what you're saying here is that the First Amendment restrains the power of the government? I mean, why would we ever want to have something that inhibits the government's ability to mess around in any portion of your life? Holy crap. And this is a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, sorry, Miss Jackson, but I'm for real. You got to check out that song. Anyway, little hit back in the 90s. This kind of goes along with, and I don't know if this was directly related to the congressional ban of TikTok, which I still haven't gotten all the details on, but I've got my concerns. But the bottom line is the Supreme Court's already ruled on stuff like this. You know, let's go back to the People versus Larry Flint when, you know, Hustler was being sued for creating pornography and being smut peddlers. And the bottom line was there are more types of protected speech that even I find offensive than there are just, you know, okay for everybody types of speech, but they are all protected under the First Amendment. And that First Amendment protection doesn't give us the right to free speech. It's in the Constitution to restrict the government from infringing on that God-given right of free speech. And I'm probably going to use that People versus Larry Flint analogy quite a bit, because even his own lawyer argued, I don't like what my client does, but I would hate to live in a country where he doesn't have the right to do it. Now, do we need to be able to put, you know, warning labels and, you know, like they used to have even on Hustler magazine in, cardboard paper or black plastic.
Yeah,
so
black
certain
plastic.
Kids can't see it. But that's because it's displayed in public. The same thing when they used to ship Playboy in the mail, you know, because, hey, that's going to be out in public, even if it's in your mailbox at some point between the mail truck and the mailbox, it's going to be out in public. I get that. But this goes back to why we have the First Amendment and the United States set up the way it is. You have a personal responsibility to choose. Is stuff bad for kids? Yes. Is there stuff out there that's bad for all people? Yes. Is it allowed to exist? Absolutely. But we don't need the government turning into more of a nanny state to save us from ourselves. Pay attention to your kids. Police yourself up. Make some better choices. Realize everything out there that is a right doesn't make it right. I don't see why the government, especially the Supreme Court, can't look back on its own past actions and say, yeah, we've kind of dealt with this. The focus, and this is what I'm hoping the TikTok thing is, the focus when it comes to this digital stuff has got to be all the peripheral things going on around the content, not the content itself, as far as data collection, security breaches, you know, things like that might be legitimate for the government to look into. But as far as who gets to see what, who gets to hear what, you want to talk about damaging false information that's harmful to people? Look at what the government puts out itself most of the time.
take the vaccine and you won't be able to spread or get COVID. You know, take the booster. You have to have your 27th booster. I did not
have sexual relations with that woman.
Exactly right. Well, the idea that the government protects you is one that I think is really pervasive. There's a lot of people that think that the government's job is to protect you from yourself. First of all, we don't live in a country that empowers the government to prevent you from doing things that are harmful to you, although we do that all of the time. For example, seatbelt laws, helmet laws, those sorts of things. Those exist, and falsely, in my opinion, to protect you from yourself. But take a look at the police, Joey. Is it the job of the police to protect you? No. The police are absolutely
not for
incapable
myself.
Of that.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Most of the time, and you know, this is not a dig on the police, but most of the time, the job that police do is to show up and create a report after something that's damaging, painful, hurtful, to investigate. There are aspects of police work that do protect you indirectly by them dealing with the best they can other individuals who are creating harm. I believe it's called an imminent threat of danger or grave bodily harm by dealing with those people. But to sit there and have a cop policing you and your actions so you're not hurting yourself, I don't know that there's a policy or law that could be proactive in that is still constitutional. It all has to be reactive, and most of it has to do with investigating and reporting.
Right, right. So the police, it's actually impossible for them to prevent crime. Their sole job is to investigate and to give a report to the prosecutor, and then the prosecutor prosecutes the crime. And I suppose, you know, secondarily you're protected by, you know, we put violent criminals in jail, stop the serial killer. Oh, by the way, we did have a serial killer that was a Wyoming native. Maybe you ought to check into him, Rod. Anyway, but let's take that and go to the Constitution. The Constitution does not tell you what you can do. It tells you what the government can't do. It's a restraint on government. So for Ketanji Brown Jackson to say, now, wait a minute, you're saying that the First Amendment prevents the government from funneling which information you can see and which you can't? Yes, that's exactly what the First Amendment does, is it prevents you from passing a law that infringes on any of those rights. A better example, well, maybe there is no better example, but another example is the Second Amendment. It clearly says, shall not be infringed. Now, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. The Second Amendment says, you know, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So very clearly, those are restraints on government. What Ketanji Brown Jackson is arguing for is that the government needs to have the right to limit what speech they deem as harmful. And keep in mind, when the government says, this is harmful, this speech is harmful, this action is harmful, what they mean is what you're doing or what you're saying is harmful to them. It's harming their agenda. So the government, those people in power, the elitists, they want the ability to be able to restrain what information you get because it harms their power. There's a big controversy going on, and this might be totally off subject, but I think it fits in here. There was an article in the Riverton Ranger talking about the chart or the prices that government entities are charging for public records requests. And a couple of them, one of them from one of the Fremont County school districts, actually the principal of that school used to be a principal in Buffalo. Her name is Jody Ibach, but she said that absolutely a couple thousand dollars is entirely appropriate to charge people for a public records request because it takes so much time to put all those together. Really, what she's saying is that it's entirely appropriate that we make your access to documents that you paid for, that you have every right to see, make it cost prohibitive for you to be able to look at them. And so it's the entire article goes through several different agencies, I guess you would say, in Fremont County and how much they charge for you to be able to see records of what they are doing. And a couple of them, school districts, were one of the big ones, but we're talking thousands of dollars. So there's really an effort afoot by not just U.S. government officials, but state officials and local officials to prevent you from really seeing what they are doing. And in a way, in a big way, that directly relates to what Ketanji Brown Jackson was saying.
Yeah, your freedom of speech is not respecting the process. Like you said, it's not an actual process. It's the way we've done it in order to cover our asses and get what we want. It's our agenda being followed. And it's interesting that you brought up that public records request, because that's something I looked into. I believe the funniest one in there, they had like Sublette County or Marbleton, town of Marbleton or something, and it said no dollar amount, just, I don't know, a few thousand bucks was the official reply.
Yeah, yeah.
They wouldn't even look into it.
A couple grand, it'd be all right.
But there's further problems with that. The reason why, and I'm going to continue to push this when we try to revive Daniel Singh's bill on public notices in newspapers, I think that these things all need to be published in databases for every agency, municipality, county, and the state. I'll get into another story why it's also important for the legislature. But when you put in a FOIA request, even if you're very specific, they're still going to be somewhat selective or incapable of finding all of it based on what the individual who's looking for the stuff thinks, feels, wants, or knows. They're not going to allow all of those documents to get out. They're going to redact some of them. I get it. There's some information that they just can't put out there. But at the same time, their individual interpretation of the law as the secretary, administrative assistant, director of whatever, well, you only asked for this. I know this is somewhat related, but I wasn't going to do extra work for you. So you spend thousands of dollars and you don't even get the information that you're looking for, regardless how specific you are in your request. The way this relates to the legislature is, I don't know how many times there was arguments on the original intent or debate that surrounded the creation of a law in the past. You know, they used to have the historic journal entries to show findings and intent when laws were created. And in fact, this year, I think it was SF-109, the Red Flag Gun Seizures Act, they ended up amending out about 7 pages of findings that made it through quite a few rounds of voting in both chambers and saying, we just don't do findings. Well, it's important that people have access to the information of why, and that that information be complete and in its totality. So I think all of this stuff needs to be on openly searchable databases. Fine, redact certain names, anything that's, you know, HIPAA related, Social Security stuff, legal stuff, but the rest of it, people need to be able to go and search on their own. Because if I'm going to spend $2,000 dealing with some goofy clerk, you know, down at town hall, and they're only going to give me an eighth of the information available and say that's it, and then I find out later, oh boy, I don't have a lot of money, but I'll find a way to sue that person.
Interestingly enough, a couple months ago, I submitted a FOIA request to the city of Sheridan. And the reason I did it was you and I plan way ahead for elections. And I had some time on my hands, and I said, you know, this would be a great story for a local election. So I went ahead and submitted the FOIA request. And I was told that I was going to have to pay $95 an hour to be able to look at this information. And so I just replied, well, the statute says a reasonable fee. I don't think that $95 an hour is a reasonable fee, but being what it is, okay, fine. Put it together. I'll pay your fee. So I went down that day, I sent the email, and I went directly to City Hall and talked to the city clerk. And I just told her, I said, you know, I've already paid for the time it takes for all of you to put together all of that information. You're public employees. My tax dollars pay your salary. So if it takes you an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, that's time I've already paid for. So why should you charge me another fee to put together information that I am legally entitled to look at, that it is your responsibility to provide, because it's public records. Now, the reason this relates to the Supreme Court story, just to kind of bring this all full circle here, is the government wants the ability to restrict speech on the front end, and they also want the ability to restrict speech on the back end. That is, prevent you from seeing what they're doing. And they also want to prevent you to be able to prevent you from talking about it. And so, I mean, it's again, the same transparency issue that we talk a lot about on this program, that those people in power don't like transparency, and they're going to do everything they can to keep whatever it is that they're doing secret from you, because if it gets out, that might endanger the next election, or it might endanger their government-funded job, or, I mean, you can fill in the blank there. But the essential point is that the public has a right to know, the public has a right to freely publish and speak on any matters that they see fit. The government does not have a right to restrict any of that, and they certainly don't have a right to restrict what you read or what you view. Like you said, Joey, if they want to put warning labels on it, fine. Nobody really pays attention to those anyway. But in no way is Ketanji Brown Jackson's argument in any way valid.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue on her side for any of that. And I want to get back, stay on this FOIA request issue just for a second. The $95 an hour, first of all, do we really have local municipal employees making $95 an hour? Because if we do, then
I know about a new
budget problem we need to. Yeah. But yeah, these exorbitant rates on top of the printing fees. Hey, we're not asking you to print it. In fact, you wouldn't have to print it or spend any time searching for it if you just put it on a publicly accessible database. I think definitely going to have to work with Sarah Penn and Daniel Singh. I think these things are between the newspaper and the government intertwined. But even the Secretary of State's office, and this happened before under Ed Buchanan, they got a statutory authority to increase their rates for voter rolls. And now in the state of Wyoming, in order to get a statewide voter roll, which is just clicking a button and sending an email, it's $125. And when they send it to you, it's not even in a format that you can just open and view. It's in the raw data format that you have to convert into a spreadsheet in order to view. So it's become ridiculously difficult and expensive to just get the basic data. And, you know, luckily we have Chuck Gray in office now, and I'm talking with him and his guys and seeing what we can do about that. But this isn't national security issues. These aren't the nuclear codes. These are basic informational sources that the people could, if they had the time, energy, and money, you know, get to, but the government is finding a way to make it more difficult. It's like lawfare within the parties. They are just finding every way to drain every ounce of energy and every dollar out of your pocket to get you to quit pushing back against them.
Well, that's exactly what it is, to make everything so cost prohibitive that the average guy, you or me, can't participate in the system. And I've been working with a guy that we both know here in Sheridan, and he's been doing a little bit investigative work for me. And, you know, every time I send him down, hey, go get this document, or, you know, go submit a request for, you know, this piece of information, he always says, well, God, they're charging me. And my reply is, well, it takes money to participate in this system. And unfortunately, even though the system's broken, we got to kind of play by their rules a little bit to get in there. And it's almost, in some cases, it's almost impossible for the average citizen to be able to, you know, look into a lot of these things because of the, you know, a couple $1,000 fee. Or think about this, Joey. It's very difficult to run any sort of campaign, whether it be local or state, if you don't have access to voter information. I mean, you could just go door to door, I guess, and knock on every door. But that information is public, and you ought to be able to access it. You ought to be able to know, okay, there's this many Republicans in this particular precinct, and these are the doors I need to knock on. But for the state to unilaterally restrict your ability to look at that information, Again, I mean, I think it's absolutely wrong. It's information we've already paid for, and there's no reason whatsoever that it needs to be restricted.
Yeah, and I would make the really shoddy argument going all the way back to, I think that some of this cumbersome information stashing and, I don't know, security that they're doing, it's a violation of the First Amendment.
Absolutely
it impedes your ability to red dress, you know, the government. You can't do it unless you have the information. You can't make a logical or legitimate complaint about what's going on if you can't get the proof or even an idea of what's going on. And we'll go back to, like you said, running for office. You don't just need voter rolls. I need the minutes and the results of the county commissioner's meeting so I can argue it, you know, effectively and properly based on the legitimate outcome, not just what I heard from Billy down the street or even worse, what my current opponent is saying actually happened. We need this kind of access to the functions of government, and it needs to be less burdensome than getting a driver's license. And right now, it's easier to get a passport than it is to get some of these documents. Anyway, what else happened in D.C.? Looks like the, what are those, natural asset companies trying to creep their way back into reality? We killed them in January, but maybe they're not all the way dead?
Well, kind of. So we did a story and I talked to Senator Lummis about it quite a while ago, and Representative Hageman, by the way. And a lot of it, the NACs, and it's NAC stands for Natural Asset Company, and it was an attempt by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, to monetize beauty. And as ridiculous as that sounds, it was a real proposal. So in other words, people could buy the beauty of your property, and you would be prevented from doing anything on that property that endangered the beauty. And that was a word that I inserted in it that doesn't really appear in their proposal, but that's essentially what they were doing. So it was the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, the Securities and Exchange Commission has decided to go at things another way. So, well, hold on before I go there. So the NACs, that was an attempt to prevent you from doing any sort of agricultural work on your property or coal mine or develop oil and gas or anything like that, because that would destroy the beauty. So it was a back-end attempt to regulate the oil and gas and coal industry. Well, now they're trying it another way, and there's a new rule out where they're trying to force companies to report carbon emissions across not only their entire supply chain, so from the very beginning where they get the materials to what they produce, but they're forcing them to report carbon emissions after their product leaves their possession. And they're called, Scope 3 reporting requirements. And the Scope 3 reporting requirements is everything that happens after your company. So in other words, Joey, let's say that you and I are making widgets. And Scope 1 and Scope 2, we have to report those carbon emissions. So everything that we did to produce our widget. And then we would have to report all of the carbon emissions that happen after we sell our widget. So whatever the people down the supply chain who bought our products that never talked to us again, we have to somehow report their carbon footprint on all of these reports. So it's an attempt to bury companies in reporting requirements. And I know it gets a little bit heady, but the essential point here is they're just trying to prevent companies from operating, bury them in paperwork and regulation so that they can't operate. And most of it is directed right at our extractive industry, so coal, oil, natural gas, and agriculture. Think about it, right? You're a cattle producer, and you sell, 100 head of cows in a given year. So you would be responsible for reporting the carbon emissions of the people who ate your beef. That's how ridiculous the Securities and Exchange Commission is getting. And it's just another, and again, these are just rules. Okay, so this is a government agency that's passing rules that don't go through Congress, that your representative hasn't had any chance to weigh in on, and they're just ad hoc passing rules, just like, you know, the best example of this, I think, and perhaps an easier one to understand, is what the ATF does. Now, in Wyoming, we're all very sensitive to any gun-related issue. And when what the ATF does is they pass rules saying how you can and if you can purchase a firearm. And the latest rule was they tried to label every piece of a firearm as a firearm. So in other words, if I had the wood from the stock, that maybe I was replacing the stock on a gun, well, that chunk of wood, according to the ATF, would be a firearm. Well, none of those rules went through Congress. Your representative didn't have a chance to weigh in on any of them. They were just passed by the ATF. So this is similar in that it's the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. They're passing rules in the same way. None of them have been vetted. None of them have been voted on. And it's just them being a regulatory agency trying to restrict the operation of private companies that happen to be involved in extractive industries. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinarily dangerous.
Yeah, that's an interesting, they're going to go after this one way or another, obviously multiple ways already, until they, I don't know, it's going to turn into China. This is like the carbon equivalent to the social credit scores.
Yes.
Well, you produce this, or even as an individual, you bought this much of this stuff and it equates to this, and it just turns into, it's a money grab and a power, you know, control over your lives type thing. I don't know that even if any of this stuff passes, is there just regulatory rules, we'll see any criminality attached to it. But nowadays you almost don't need criminality. If you can't utilize your bank account because now everything's electronic, because the government says, well, your carbon credit score is this, that, and the other, then, you know, they can force businesses in and out of operation. They can force individuals in and out of functionality. And what's really interesting to me is, are they going to go to the point of saying, well, every electronic vehicle we sell, the future carbon impact of that vehicle, when the battery catches fire and that thing bursts into flame, is this, and actually apply that potential reality to, you know, their little system here. Because what it looks like they're going to do is, with everything else, henpeck, you know, certain things, like you said, they're going to try to shut down the oil, gas, extractive industries, but they're not going to look at the reality. And yet they are still avoiding the question of, is carbon even a problem? They're just going out there and doing it and going nuts. And we've seen this, especially with, you know, Bill Gates doing his thing. He was a big push for the electronic vehicles, and now he's going after cattle. And I still don't know that any of that's a problem, but I will, you know, he's arguing that, what is it, internal combustion engines are just slightly ahead of cattle for what's going to blow the tits off the earth here in the next 5-6 years. And I'll challenge Bill Gates, come on down to Wyoming, or hey, I'll even come out to Seattle. You spend a night in a garage with a running car, I'll spend a night in the garage with a cow. We'll see who comes out better, and then we'll have the conversation, because I don't think Bill's going to do too well. I know that kind of helps prove his point, but the bottom line is, yes, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, noxious gases, methane, in concentrations can be harmful to humans, but there's never been any proof that it's harmful to humanity. But this is what they're going to base all this stuff on, and they're not going to include. Are you telling me that you're going to go out and buy a house and they're going to calculate in the credit, carbon credit score of the potentiality of your house burning down and the carbon footprint of that, so you're going to pay an extra carbon tax just in case your house burns down? And they're going to argue, well, of course you're worried about your house burning down. That's why you got homeowners insurance, because it's a possibility. I mean, it'll never end. It's absolute total control and restrictive actions by the government that are based on literally nothing.
Well, I think you just hit on it. So none of this really has anything to do with carbon emissions or the planet or saving the planet. And let me qualify that for a minute. There are true believers that are totally in on this whole go green, new green deal, save the planet, carbon emissions thing. That's absolutely true. But that's not the end goal. So why is it that there's this push by the Biden administration to force you to buy an electric vehicle? Yes, they claim that that's going to save the planet and there aren't going to be any more carbon emissions, even though the carbon emissions required to produce said electric vehicle and the batteries included in that electric vehicle are far more damaging to the environment. But you have to look at what the overall goal is. So in Wyoming, if you have an electric vehicle, you are not going to be able, right now anyway, you're not going to be able to travel from Cheyenne to Sheridan in one fell swoop. You're not going to be able to stop at the gas station, fill up your car, and continue going. It's not going to take you 4.5 hours or 5 hours, depending on how you go, to travel from Cheyenne to Sheridan. It's going to take you probably 18 hours. So it's a restriction on your freedom to move. And I know that that sounds conspiratorial, but really, look at what the goal is and look at what the eventual result is. It's a restriction on everything that you do. The Biden administration has been very intent on being involved in everything that's in your house, your light bulbs, your refrigerator, your stove, your dishwasher, the car you drive. Think about all of the things that they're trying to restrict. So essentially, their goal is complete control over everything that you do. And I know that that's difficult for a lot of people to understand because normal thinking, freedom-loving American citizens don't view the world in terms of control. So it's difficult for us to understand why someone would want to do that. But that's the eventual goal. Again, I keep mentioning this article over and over. It's called Road Trip from Hell, Cheyenne to Casper in 15 hours. But that's the goal right there, to restrict your freedom of movement. Now, take this back into history a little bit. What do socialists and communists and, you know, dictatorial regimes always do? They restrict your freedom of movement. Papers, please. Present your papers at the border. Every dictatorial regime does that because if they're able to restrict your freedom of movement, they can control everything that you do. And, I mean, the eventual goal of a lot of these people, even though it sounds Dr. Evil-ish, is to control each and every aspect of your life.
Yeah, there seems to be a common thread in a few of these stories we're talking about today. They want to control what you can and can't see on the internet. They want to control the information you can get about official government actions and public records. And they want to control your movement, what you can buy, what you can basically live with, or they deem you can live without. So I think it's all pointing to that absolute government control under the guises of we're saving you from yourselves. That's another theme that keeps popping up in all these things of you're going to destroy the planet with your lifestyle, even though you technically have the freedom to do pretty much what you want. But we're going to make it so cumbersome to live that way and make it so impossible for you to utilize the things. That's the other thing that we didn't talk about. All of these restrictions on social media, the EVs, all these other things that they're coming out with and mandating, have a little switch in them that the government can say, no, you've had enough refrigeration on your food for the month. No, you've driven far enough this month. No, you've spent enough money on things this month. So even if you have the means, you still won't have the access to do anything that you need to do or you feel you need to do to live your life. And you're right. Once they start putting up that block against the freedom to move, the next thing that goes, you know, they took the guns before they took the wedding rings, as they say back in the Holocaust. And that's where it's all headed. And I'm not doing this as a conspiracy theorist. I'm saying historically, that's where, you know, when a nation reaches a level of decadence or corruption, it shows itself in these different veins. And we're starting to plunge headfirst into actively putting America on the track to be there in the next 10 years. And I don't do feelings. I don't live my life in fear, but it is scary how many people are blind to it. And then how many people are in favor of it thinking, oh, well, you know, it's just going to make everything better for everybody. Well, yeah, you may not be around long enough to enjoy it, or you may be out there replacing carbon emitting farm equipment by working in the American gulags you know, getting all this Monsanto corn and wheat for the government food program that's coming next.
Well, there's one more story I wanted to hit you with this morning, Joey. Trump is now saying that the GOP has to endorse exceptions for abortion in order to get elected. And it's the same three exceptions that, we always talk about, rape, incest, and danger to the mother. So the president, and this is from Breitbart News, and let me just read you the first couple of lines here. It says, former President Donald Trump said Sunday on Fox News that Republicans had to include the three exceptions to their abortion position if they want to get elected. When asked about the rape, incest, and life of the mother exceptions, Trump said, quote, if you look at France, if you look at different places in Europe with, if you look at a lot, and this, again, this is President Trump, so you got to kind of go with it. If you look at a lot of the civilized world, they have a period of time, but you can't go out 7 months or 8 months or 9 months, and he's talking about, and have an abortion. If the Republicans spoke about it correctly, it never hurt me from the standpoint of elections. It hurt a lot of Republicans, and if you think you have to have those three exceptions. So what he's saying is, we've moved, as a culture, we've moved towards a place where if you want people to vote for you, you have to say that there's exceptions to your abortion law. What say you?
Well, I've actually dealt with this kind of thing before, as we, you know, passed some laws a couple of years ago here in Wyoming, and there had to be a few exceptions. And I have a pretty unpopular opinion, even among conservatives, where I said, okay, we'll talk about rape. Incest is already illegal if it's rape. If incest is consensual, then throw incest out. I'm sorry if your baby ends up being born with a, you know, a thumb growing out of their forehead. But hey, unless you're going to have somebody say, no, it was rape, it doesn't matter if it's incest or not. We need to get away from this, you know, concept that somehow that's a bigger problem, even if it potentially causes medical issues with the child. When it comes to health of the mother, survive, I think that needs to be very intently defined. Yes, I believe that when a woman's immediate medical health or life is in danger, you have to choose to save one or the other, and normally that's going to be the mother. The problem is the health of the mother standard has turned into the future financial lifestyle of the mother. That's her life being in danger because she's not going to be. No, we need to very clearly define what that means when it's talking about health of the mother. Now, rape's a little different because rape in itself is not only a crime, it's a deprivation of liberty and massively impactful to the victim. But the only thing I would say about rape is, hey, if you want to get an abortion because you were raped, I understand. I would counsel you personally to not do so. I've met children of rape. I've served alongside them in the military. Their lives are viable. But again, I'm not a woman. I'm not a victim of rape. I'm not going to get into that. But I would say there should have to be a requirement that at least a formal complaint and charges for rape be, you know, hey, I was raped. Okay, bring me the police report. Even if you don't know your attacker, I get that. I don't get how many possibilities for scenarios there are when it comes to that. But there is no scenario where you can't say, hey, I was raped. I'm going to talk to the police, make a case, let them find, oh, you're re-victimizing the victim. I'm not saying it has to go anywhere. I'm not saying they have to be able to name somebody. I'm not saying that person has to be convicted. I'm saying if you're going to go and use I was raped as the reason for getting an abortion, we should have, as a society, the right to seek justice for the crime that was committed against you, against we the people. So, yeah, I don't know that I would agree with President Trump 100% on just throwing out those blanket statements. I think they need to be well defined. I think incest needs to be pulled out and thrown into the rape category. And this kind of goes back to my stance on the right to life altogether. In fact, I'm going to be supporting some platform amendments in the Republican Party platform saying it's not from the moment of creation to natural death. It's the moment of creation to natural death, or when you end up taking a life in self-defense under constitutionally protected provisions, or, you know, through the proper use of due process, the state has deprived you from life because we believe in the death penalty. There are other scenarios where this bumper sticker pro-life doesn't apply properly. And even the definitions that they put into the platform, or God love them, the Wyoming right to life, this creation till natural death, it doesn't really apply in reality. So we need to buckle down on the definitions, because words mean things. And I think a lot of people are running out there emotionally and attempting to get elected as opposed to having actual defined principles.
First, I think that this whole exception to, you know, the abortion law, it's become kind of a tagline. And a lot of voters are, I don't want to say that they're uneducated, but a lot of people don't take the time to look into these issues as much as they should before they go to the polls. But I think that this question is easily answerable from the candidate's perspective. I completely agree with you that if it's a question of rape, then you need to report it, because it makes sense that we stop rapists, then we put them in jail. There's a reason why it's a really heinous crime. It's a reason why we punish it as severely as we do. Now, there is an exception in the Right to Life as a Human Right Act that if you want an abortion because of a rape, well, you have to report it, and it needs to be reported within a given period of time. I can't exactly remember what the law actually says, and this is the one that's in court right now. But the rape needs to be reported. It needs to be provable. We need to be able to go out and catch the person that did it and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. Now, I personally don't believe that abortion is right at all, period. I believe that life is sacred. However, I get the political implications of that. But if we have to have an exception for rape, it needs to be reported. It needs to be within a certain time frame. And we have to be able to go out and get the guy. I'm not saying that arresting the guy is a prerequisite, but you got to engage the criminal justice system in order to get that exception. Incest, same thing there. Incest is a crime. It ought to be punished. And so you throw that, same thing you said, you throw that in with the whole rape thing. And secondly, this whole life of the mother thing, it's really a red herring, because that's not a question of abortion. That's a question of triage. First of all, those situations are very, very rare. Now, I happen to know a person that died in childbirth, but as a whole, if you look at the whole country, those situations where, you know, the life of the mother might be in danger, those actually are pretty rare. But even in that instance, it's not a question of abortion. It's a question of triage. And doctors already look at a situation and say, I have two victims here, or I have two people that are in need of medical attention. Which one do I have the highest probability of saving? Okay, I'm going with that one. Try to work on both of them, but I'm going to try to save this person first. Doctors do that all the time. It's called triage. It's not abortion. Another thing that all these liberal whack job pro-abortion activists point out is, well, what about ectopic pregnancies? Okay, ectopic pregnancies, they're not viable anyway. That kid is never going to be born. And so it's not a question of abortion either. Now, what I'm suggesting is you can make this argument to voters. And if you explain it in such a way to say, look, really, this whole argument is kind of a red herring. Here's what I believe. Here's where I'm at on it. If you talk to any reasonable person, I would say the vast majority of people, that when you knock on their door and they say, well, what about abortion? You explain your position to them. I think you can win that argument. But just to unilaterally say, nope, you have to endorse these three exceptions or you're not going to get elected, I completely reject that argument. I don't think that it's on base, and I don't think that it's very good advice for any candidate.
No, and I'll go a little further and say, let's take the situation out of the situation. Let's not make it rape. It is whatever. In having that conversation with voters, even if they don't agree with your well-explained stance, and I've done this a few times, they may at least appreciate, you may get their support by, you know, proving, hey, This is a candidate that actually thinks about things now. I've got somebody who goes into the process and doesn't just come with those bumper sticker taglines, which you know I hate. So for President Trump to say, hey, in order to get elected, you have to say these three things, whether you believe them or not, I think it's ridiculous. And I'll give you an example. Chris Rothfuss, I don't agree with him situationally on just about anything, but procedurally, watching him do his thing, knowing that he's thought it out and he understands the impacts of certain things, I got a bit of respect for the guy. So if you're a candidate, make sure you have your personal platform, your stances, and your principles well-developed, because you might catch them on the other side. Even if they disagree with you, they'll at least respect the fact that you're a thinker and a doer. But yeah, we're going to have to watch and see how that one plays out. And I think we're just about coming up to the end of the hour here. So we got an interesting schedule coming out. A few changes that we've had over the last week coming back into our regular new schedule. We got Cowboy State Politics right after the morning show here. I believe that starts right at 10 a.m. Just Blame Joey Live, going to be in the studio today at 11. And then the rest of the day, I don't know, we got a little Paul Harvey, some Ramble Room. Stick with the Independence Network. Stay tuned in and keep caught up. And make sure if you have a question, concern, comment, complaint, or critique, you're catching up with one of us at our respective emails. You can find us on the website. You can find us on Facebook. But stick around. This election season is going to be interesting, and you'll hear it all here on the Independence Network.